Welcome, this is Inside Flix. I'm Mike, and I'm here with my brothers Richard and Raymond. We get together on a weekly basis to talk movies. This episode, we're going to take a look and review two new movie releases that are now available to stream. First up is the 1950s small-town mystery drama, The Vast of Night, which was just released on Amazon Prime Video. This is a slam dance winning indie film made by first-time feature director Andrew Patterson. We're also going to look at the new Spanish language Netflix drama, I'm No Longer Here. This is a little known film from Mexico that was just released on the streaming platform. Okay, let's kick things off with The Vast of Night.
Number, please.
Hello? Is this really large object holding over my land?
What's going on, Everett?
718 here at WOTW. We got a sound we'd like to play that seems to be bouncing around the valley tonight.
Yes, I have a story that might be helpful.
I can tell you what's going on.
The sound we heard out in the desert, it was coming from thousands of feet higher than anything could fly.
They've come here before. They've liked this place. They always have.
Something's up there now. It's something talking. And they don't stay for long.
Hey!
What's going on? There's something in the sky.
Rich, tell us a little bit about the movie.
Well, it takes place in the twilight time of the 1950s. On a one fateful night in New Mexico, young switchboard operator Faye and charismatic radio DJ Everett discover a strange audio frequency that could change their small town and the future forever.
Raymond, let's hear your review.
Okay, I just finished watching this movie about an hour ago, and I went into it completely blind. I didn't see any trailers for it. I didn't really know what it's about. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very well-made, low-budget, kind of indie sci-fi film. I think I felt it had like an influence of a lot of the early kind of Steven Spielberg films, specifically like Close Encounters and even a little bit of George Lucas's American Graffiti, because of the 1950s kind of teenager kind of romance type of thing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really appreciated though about this movie is that, you know, It feels like it has a very indie sensibility. It feels like everybody in this, like I haven't done any research on it, but I imagine this is like their first movie for everybody involved with this.
Pretty much the filmmaker or the director Andrew Patterson is his feature film debut. I think he's from Oklahoma, and he's kind of someone who just came out of nowhere too.
And I think him and his team just like completely knocked it out of the park. I mean, like, it's not like a perfect movie or anything, but it's the type of movie I always want to see from a first time filmmaker. I mean, it's very focused on a particular subject, and it's got limited locations, but it's done extremely well. Like it feels like these guys have done this before, even though you can tell that it's their first movie. The thing that I loved about the plot is that it has this almost like Bob Lazar kind of alien sighting, kind of alien abduction aspect to the film. And I always find these type of stories extremely fascinating, and really a big part of the movie is kind of just people telling these stories.
Are you a big Blink-182, that guy who revealed a bunch of UFO videos like that?
I'm aware of those videos. I find that all that stuff incredibly fascinating, and that's a big part of the movie. You could tell that the people who wrote this film and made this movie are incredibly interested in all that, and they kind of just came up with a small little movie that they could do based on all their obsessions. And I think they did a great job.
Rich, do you agree? Do you think this is a good debut from a unknown director?
Yes and no. I think the director did an okay job for a first-time director, I guess you could say that. I think the cinematographer probably lit it a little bit too dark. But the best overall was the acting, and the best overall behind the scenes was probably the casting, because those three leads, I'll say three because it's those two, the DJ and the phone operator, and the old, then the second and the third one. I'm counting the old lady.
Okay.
Because the lines they had to learn for the lines that they had to learn to carry this film was incredibly long, like too long. I mean, for the way they shot it, how they wanted to, how the director wanted to go full Cuaron and overblow the one take feel.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just another gimmick, and it's totally unnecessary because he takes those long takes.
Mm-hmm.
and you use the camera movement throughout the fields and all that, and then once you get to the operating room, he edits like a madman on one scene or whatever to add a little bit of drama.
This movie has some, I think, serious editing issues.
Yes, I mean,
but you could, it's all like first time people. I mean, you could tell that there's very little experience, but I mean, some of it's done in such a professional way. I mean, I'm saying
the acting wise. What they had to do in front of I think
there was a lot of the promise in the cinematography and promise in pretty much every aspect of this movie.
No, for all those people who are complaining about Game of Thrones being too dark, that one episode was being too dark, you could say the same thing about this one.
Dude, this is like a fraction of the budget.
Oh, I know, but all that complaints about that Game of Thrones episode was totally unnecessary. And
I don't agree with that. I couldn't see anything.
I had to do the same.
I didn't have any issues here with the lighting.
I would say that my problems with the movie is more the visuals. I have no problems with the writing. I think the screenplay is pretty decent. I think the acting, like Richard said, is superb for a low budget film. Sierra McCormick and Jake Horowitz, who are the two stars of the film, do a more than adequate job here. They're very good. Who is that older lady? Who's
Gail Kronauer?
She is also a great addition to this cast. Like you were saying,
well, it was just the one. I mean, like the director hadn't took those one takes where those her whole dialogue scene was just unnecessary, basically.
I thought it was great.
Like you were saying, they were giving a long script and they had to pull this off, these monologues in one take, basically. And they did a really good job. They kept my interest. I mean, if it was really some bad acting, I think this movie would fail because really just everything rides on their performances.
I did like the look of it. I mean the costuming yeah. Also,
the production designs, the costumes are very good. The production department should be commended for turning these locations into a believable 1950 small town, especially on a small budget. The look,
which probably the darkness of the whole movie helped it. Mm.
Yes, the film is very dark.
I had no issue with this, man.
I think I understand what they were trying to go for, the low key lighting look, which is mm-hmm. very similar to what you would find on a David Fincher film. I just didn't think they quite pulled it off. The movie needed some rim lights, give that rim light on the actor's face, or so you could separate the actors from the backgrounds. The end result is really murky, low contrast, smudgy. And this movie is available in Ultra HD on Amazon Prime, 4K mm-hmm. basically. And I found it to be very, like I said, murky. And I think the idea was here. They were trying to replicate that 16mm film look. And I think that was a bad choice. But to put that aside, I have problems with some of the directing choices here. Like Rich was saying, there's a lot of Steadicam shots, long tracking shots, a lot of one-take shots where the camera simply sticks on the actor's face for about 5 minutes.
The wrong angle.
Yeah, even longer at certain other scenes. And I found that to be, I don't know, boring, a little boring, uninteresting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Look, there in the film, there's some really nice camera flourishes. There's one really exciting one take, a 5 minute long tracking shot in the film where the camera basically travels from one end of the town to the other. And that shot is very ambitious and it's done splendidly. And the director should be proud of himself for coming up with that shot and pulling it off. It's great. It's a great shot. But that's just one shot in a whole 90 minute film. And for the most part, I found this to be mediocre.
Well, I wouldn't say mediocre. Well, because it is a first-time director. I mean, that you got to give him that. I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, it's.
I think a lot of the film just feels boring to me.
Well, I think it needed another rewrite where there would be more tighter script.
I don't think it needed a rewrite.
Well, I like the premise because I love Fire in the Sky, and I wanted it to be something like that, you know, but mm-hmm. indie. I mean, totally, you know, just take the guts of it, and you can use that kind of attention mm-hmm. tension in that film and put it in this type of
right
indie film, and it was totally, you know, there was nothing to it.
Like I said, I have problems with the visual aspect of the movie. Sound wise, though, I have to say this: sound wise, I thought this was really solid. I give credit to the director Andrew Patterson because he was smart enough to realize that the sound, or having great sound, or having a strong sound design, can make your film feel more cinematic. And because there's a lot of first-time filmmakers who don't pay enough attention to the sound, or they don't leave enough money in the budget to have a decent sound department, and a movie could look really great, and like visually, like cinematography great, but if the sound's horrible, it feels cheap right away. You know it. Mm-hmm. You know, you could hear it, and it feels like a second-rate film. Patterson here really did a wise thing to focus on the sound and make it important, because I think this is one of the best sounding films for a movie of this budget, and I'm mm-hmm. assuming this is a low budget film, and that's why I think this would have been a better if this was released as a scripted podcast. If this was released as a scripted podcast, I think this would be a very entertaining idea, but because the visuals to me felt very boring.
Well, in many ways, I kind of thought this movie was like a cinematic podcast, but a cinematic podcast like with kind of like people telling their alien abduction stories and their like kind of, you know, weird UFO sighting stories. But again, like a cinematic version of that. And I thought it was great. That was excellent.
Well, the movie starts with this parody of a Twilight Zone show. Mm-hmm. On the TV, there's a black and white Twilight Zone type of show playing. The camera pushes in into a tight close up, and then we go right into the TV screen. And I guess the filmmaker here is trying to say that we're now in a Twilight Zone like world. And to me, this movie is not like Twilight Zone, because Twilight Zone is actually captivating. It's each episode of Twilight is kind of brilliantly done, that is socially relevant. There's nothing.
I thought it was trying to be more like a radio show.
Yeah, they were trying to do it like a War of the Worlds.
Yeah, War of the Worlds. Yeah, I would say
that's what I thought.
So to even bring up a Twilight Zone idea is wrong. It doesn't make sense. I think they should have opened the shot with a radio, and if they push it into the radio, I would at least get an idea of what the film is trying to say.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
I think the film should have been like set in the 1930s than the 1950s. But whatever the case is, there are some really great things about this film that I like, but overall, I just felt it very boring.
No, I wouldn't say very, but it was just...
Well, mediocre.
Yeah.
I didn't feel that way. For what they were working with, for the small, well, I don't know what the budget was, but it feels very, very small. I'm repeating myself, but I was extremely impressed with everything they were able to pull off. I don't think everything in the movie is perfect, but again, I think there's a lot of promise, and I would love to see what this team could do with a budget.
Yeah, I'll say that. I would like to see what this director does again. Andrew Patterson has proved that he is capable of leading a team, a really great production team, a really great sound team, and so I would like to see him do. I'd like to see his next film. Definitely like to see his next film.
I thought it all kind of came around in a really satisfying way. I was happy with the movie. It's nothing super original, but I was happy with it.
Yeah, if this was 30 minutes or 40 minutes long short film, I think I would love it. But this is a 90-minute feature film that feels a little stretched out.
But were you ever bored by any of the conversations or anything like that?
I was.
Oh, you were?
Yeah,
oh,
they were very long. Yeah. They were very long.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I guess maybe it's going to depend like how much into this type of subject and material you're into. If you're into listening to this type of podcasts, maybe, and stuff, Maybe you'll enjoy this, because I'm into that stuff.
No, if you're into UFOs, I think you would like the movie. And I'm into UFOs. I thought maybe, like I said, it felt a little, I don't know, what's another word for boring? I mean, all right, let's get to the grade. Rich, how would you grade this?
Like I said, it's the acting that that wins my praises for the film. So I'll probably just give it a C minus.
I was thinking the C minus too, but I was bored most of the time of the film, so I'm going to give this a D plus. Raymond,
I give it a 7.5 out of 10.
Which is what, a B for you,
or a C plus, or a minus? No,
for me, it's probably like a C, but I think on a more traditional scale, a 7.5 would be like a B minus, right?
Or so a B minus, C plus.
Yeah.
All right.
So that was our review of The Vast of Night. All right. Coming up next is the Netflix film I'm No Longer Here.
¿Quién habla?
Quiero mandar un saludo para mi raza.
¿Cómo no? Con todo gusto, carnalito. ¿De dónde nos llamas?
Acá de Nueva York.
¡Caray, qué internacional!
Está apagada la canción, ve. Vamos a bailar.
16. How old are you? 17.
Is there any way that I can take your photograph just like that?
Hey, he doesn't speak English.
All right, Rich, tell us a little bit about this movie.
In Monterrey, Mexico, a young street gang spends their days dancing to slow down cumbia and attend parties. After a mix-up with a local cartel, their leader is forced to migrate to the U.S., but quickly longs to return home.
Yeah, this is a movie that I really, really enjoyed. In fact, I think this is one of my favorite movies of the year. And but I can see why someone would not agree with that, because I think the main actor here, Juan Daniel Garcia Trevino, is a non-professional actor, I believe. And I think this is his first acting job. So the movie really rides on his shoulders, and his performance carries a lot of weight. So, and I think his performance here is very naturalistic. It's candid, but he doesn't display a lot of emotions throughout the movie, and he's kind of quiet and he doesn't talk much. So I could see how someone might interpret that as callous, or his character is arrogant. I actually found him to be quite interesting. I found myself really deeply sympathizing and empathizing with his story and his journey. So, you know, right away, almost like 10 minutes into the film, I had this connection with this character. I felt the character. I had an affinity for this person. Because watching this movie, I found a lot of similarities between the character's culture and the culture of this Mexican dance culture. With my own teenage years in the 90s, I was in a party crew in Orange County in the 90s. We used to listen to house music, and we would go to warehouse parties, dance clubs. We would go to house parties, and we used to listen to Power 106, Power Tools, you know. And so I've been waiting for years, and decades actually, for a movie set against the backdrop of that particular dance culture in the 90s. This movie is not that. But it's it's the closest thing I've seen to capture that spirit. So I was very captivated by this film. Rich, what's your thoughts?
It was okay. I mean, it's not that great to me. I mean, writer-director Fernando Frias does have something on it, but I guess he is most famous for a couple episodes, directing a couple episodes of Los Spookies.
No, he directed the whole season, I believe.
The main actor, I never felt like he did that great of a job up until he got into New York. And the one I was impressed by was the Lynn, the I guess it was a Chinese girl?
Yeah, I think a Chinese-American girl, teenage girl. She has a relationship with this character.
She's the one who stand out in the picture for me. And I wanted, for Because this whole movie, I thought this was, when once he went to New York, I thought this was going to be some kind of American dream story.
No, it's not.
But no, it's not. It's no, like,
it's not an American immigrant story. This is about a guy.
Because I want to know why this guy chose to go to the U.S. at all.
Yeah, we don't find that out, but we... I think the idea of the film is that he's forced out of his, he's from Monterrey, Mexico. He gets in trouble with the cartel or the.
Yeah,
or,
I like that part. I like that part how he got in trouble. That was great to me.
So but. He's forced to leave Mexico. Now, yes, it's true. We don't know why he chose Mexico or New York.
That's a big plot hole for me.
All right. I don't think that's a plot hole.
Yeah, but he, whatever the case, he's in New York, and we see him kind of like very unable to find a place. He doesn't feel comfortable in New York. He hates it there. Other immigrants there make fun of him because of the way he looks. But I feel very sympathetic by this guy. And like there was a lot of stuff that we used to do. He goes to the marketplace to find DJ mixtapes. Yeah. We used to do that too. We used to go to the swap meet and get mixtapes. I mean, the similarities here with the culture is they're very, very close, and I really kind of love this movie. Raymond, what's your thoughts of I'm No Longer Here?
Well, yeah, I think there's actually a lot of similarities with a lot of the kind of music, kind of the young music cultures around the world. And also with the kind of more modern music cultures today, I think there are a bit similarities. But yeah, I absolutely love this movie too, man. I thought this was great. I really enjoyed the character. I really kind of related to him in the way as well. And I don't know. I think this is actually probably one of the strongest, most original coming of age film I've seen all year.
Yeah.
I really like this a lot. I wasn't really expecting it to like it that much because I'm gonna say I kind of judged it. I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like this movie with this dude with this ridiculous hair. But I watched it, and after a while, I'm like, you know, this dude's kind of cool. I really enjoyed it. I thought this was a fun movie. I was entertained by it. I loved this guy's journey, and I loved where it kind of ended up. It's a very different and interesting coming of age film.
Yeah, it's also like the last, you know, this was like the end of that Cumbia movement, it seems like. Because you see what happens to his crew. And his crew is engulfed by the violent nature of the gang life. And I remember that, too, in the 90s. It, you know, the gang life invaded the party crew scene and really teared it apart. And I felt that in this movie as well. So I really enjoyed this film. Rich... What's your grade? I'm assuming that this is probably not a recommendation from you, but what's your grade?
No, I liked the beginning of it, and when he was in Mexico, and then, I was fine up until he went. Well, I thought he was going to go somewhere. I liked the part where he met the girl.
That was a very sweet. Yeah, and he's also in New York with nobody. I mean, he's by himself. He is. He's 17 years old.
But he was hot. He was hard headed.
No, that's just no. He wasn't. But yes, get to your grade.
I'll probably give it another C-.
C-. So you do kind of recommend it a little bit.
Yeah, I like the Mexico part.
I think I agree with Rich that the best part of this film is that when we see him in his element with his party crew. He's basically a dancer.
I think my favorite part of the movie was actually the relationship with the Asian girl. It actually reminded me a little bit of I Lost My Body.
I like that too. I like that. That made it a much. When we got to that part, I was thinking this isn't a pretty decent film. But once we got to that relationship, where he has this relationship with this Chinese American girl, a teenage girl, it's an interesting idea of two cultures trying to communicate with each other, but aren't able to fully. But we could see them trying, and I thought that made the movie a much better movie, a much better story. I really kind of liked that part of the film too. But the one I gravitated toward was this cumbia dance culture in Mexico. Because I don't think we've ever seen anything like that in any other film. That's very different from anything, any Mexican film. And so my grade is that I'm giving this an A. Like I said, this is one of my favorite movies of the year. Raymond, what's your grade?
Yeah, I'm also giving it an A, and I think this is my favorite movie of the year.
What's the number?
A 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10. Ooh. Yeah. All right. So, yeah. So that's our review. So, okay. That's our review for I'm No Longer Here. That's currently streaming on Netflix. All right. Rich, where can they find Inside Flicks?
They can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and they can find us also on Apple iTunes and Google Podcasts. But you can find all our links on InsideFlicks.com.
All right. We'll be back with a new episode soon. Thank you for listening to Inside Flicks.